latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The 145th Kentucky Derby is in the books, and it was a wild one. Now it's off to Baltimore for the second leg of the Triple Crown. Can Country House rebound in 2 weeks with another solid performance, or will a new face smile at Pimlico? See what the experts have to say in ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide. That's right, the guide is free to everyone and available online at ExpressBet.com. Inside the guide, you'll find expert selections, analysis, and suggested $100 wagering strategies from some of the game's sharpest handicappers, writers, and broadcasters. Don't plug down your hard-earned bread until you've read what these guys have to say. Also, ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide provides you with important stats and trends you won't find anywhere else. Visit ExpressBet.com to access the free Preakness Wager Guide beginning Friday, May 10th, and an updated version that includes Eddie Olchuk's picks May 16th. Open a new ExpressBet account and get up to a $500 welcome bonus. Visit the website for complete details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, just a skosh past the top of the hour, and you want to talk about catching fire. Right from the first race of the Churchill season, going back, a week ago Saturday night, and Michelle Lovell burst out of the gate, wins the first race of the meet, and now wins the stake on Saturday, the Mamzelle, change of control. Michelle Lovell joins us. Congratulations.
Thank you, Steve.
As if the meet didn't get off to a good enough start, how about sending out the longest shot on the board and scoring? I didn't watch it live. I saw right away on Twitter, I think, because I was watching what was going on in New York, and I was immediately tickled by you winning with change of control.
Yeah, it was a real exciting race. I have to say, it was It's been a fun meet so far, and needless to say, and I mean, we kicked it off good, and boy, winning the race with her was definitely a highlight. It was my first stakes here, so that was exciting, and I think it's my first the first stakes win for her owner too. So I wish they had been here, but they weren't. But we still celebrated as if they were. So yeah, it was great.
The owner, Roddy Harrison, this is a FedBiz filly out of a Quiet American mare, and you know, was actually, you know, bought originally $95,000, and that must have been as a weanling, actually. No, this is the 17, 18, 19, would have been as a fall yearling. Right. Yeah, the October sale, there we go, OBS October. And it feels like she's you know, kind of progressive. Talk about how you got her, for starters.
Well, I got her. Roddy Harrison and his son Perry. They called me. I met them a few years back. Perry had inquired about a filly that I had that won on Oaks Day here, and he ended up buying her privately, and so I had known him over the phone. And so a couple years later, he was looking to make a change with a couple of his horses, and he called me, and we hit it off, and he sent me her and another horse that I have for them. And he had claimed her in New York, and she hadn't run well yet, and we ran her here, and she ran a nice second, and then we took her to the fairgrounds and tried to get her on the turf several times, and it kept coming off because we had such a wet winter. And she broke her maiden down there on the dirt and on an off track, which we didn't think she liked at all, and so she surprised us. We almost scratched her that day, so we were lucky we stayed in. Anyway, she's been a pleasure to have. And she's just a young, developing filly that really, she changes surface was key to her, I think. She really liked it out there, obviously.
And frankly, you look at that breeding, and it does have a little bit of everything. And of course, FedBiz, a son of Giant's Causeway, and there's hints of turf, you know, here and there in the pedigree. You look at this spot. Not only are you dealing with the turf and a sprint, but you're cutting all the way back to 5 furlongs. How did that figure into the decision making, and then the performance? Because she absolutely drowned this field at 36-1.
Yeah, so honestly, we thought that she would probably want to stretch out on the turf, and I think they tried that the first time with her and Laurel, and it came off, and she didn't run well in the slop. And then we tried it once with me, and she long, and it came off again, and she didn't like it. So we thought she might not like the slop. And she never trained very forwardly on and off track, which we had plenty of chances to find that out down at the fairgrounds. Well, all over the country, it rained all winter. So I was like, I don't know if she doesn't like the slop or she doesn't like to go long in the slop. So that's why we made a decision to stay in, and when she broke her maiden on the off track. So we're like, well, maybe she just doesn't want to go long. And cutting back to 5 furlongs, we've just been trying to get her on the turf, and this was kind of a spot where the owner, you know, just said, do you mind nominating her or take a look? And it's probably going to be deep to throw her in, but, you know, if we can get some sort of stakes placing on her, it would be worth a shot. And so we all agreed that would be it's a good spot to try, you know, against straight three-year-olds, and, you know, it came up pretty tough. And, of course, we got a couple of scratches out of there, which, you know, was helpful. And a couple of nice horses stayed in, and we didn't. I thought she'd run really well. She'd been training super going into the race, and we weren't really sure if 5 furlongs was going to be it, but it was a good chance to see if she'd like the turf at all. And it seemed like she really loved it, and they ran fast up front, and she broke with them, And I thought, great, we'll just sit right in the pack and hopefully she'll come running home. And when she went out the back, I was like, oh, my gosh, we're going to be totally outclassed here. And it took her a bit to get her feet under her and figure out what she was running on. She had a couple of, you know, little bobbles, you know, and then she started stretching through the turn and passing a couple horses. And I thought, okay, she's not going to embarrass herself. Maybe she'll get a piece of it. And when they came around the turn, I saw Gabriel. He was down inside a little bit, and I thought, oh, gosh, don't be a hero and try to split horses. You know, hopefully it'll turn her out, and he did. And once she lined out, she exploded, and it was she had a turn of foot, and she ran home fast. So it was a great surprise for her to win like that, honestly. So 5 furlongs, we didn't think it would be long enough, but she didn't care what we thought, obviously. So, yeah, she came out of it awesome. She's very proud of herself.
Well, as you should be, and obviously you should be as well. And for the Harrison team, she's certainly, if they're betters, she's paid for herself. She's had two wins at, 20-1 and 36-1. So she's one of those horses that's paying her way for those that believe.
Right. I wish we had a bet on her. I don't gamble. I don't bet on my horses hardly ever. And, you know, you always wish you had her when they pay so much. So I have a few people that did bet on her, and so, of course, they're smiling. But I'll take the win. That's good enough for me. You know, it was a fun day, and she's just a cool little filly, and we're, you know, excited about her future.
What's she like to be around?
Oh, she's awesome. She's just she's kind of a quiet filly. She feels good in the morning, but she's so easy to train. She's just easy on herself, and she's great to be around. She's a beautiful filly too. She's a really pretty neat little package, you know, pretty athletic looking and balanced, and her mind is really good, and her demeanor is wonderful. So yeah, she's a pleasure to have.
Well, and I'm just looking, because I think if I let me just see if. She will be. That's what I thought. She is fed. She goes down in history for FedBiz as his first stake winner.
That's awesome. I didn't know she was his first or his second. But yeah, I thought she might be. Somebody told me that she might be his first stakes winner. So we'll take it. That's awesome.
Well, he's had multiple graded stake placements, but I do not see a stake win. I Zenden was second in the Swale, Bizwax was third in the Honeybee, Family Biz third in the Jerome, but I do not see. I see allowance wins. I see a couple of maiden winners. No, this is FedBiz. So there you go.
Good.
tell Elliot Walden to send you something nice, and the team at the team at Windstar, they owe you something. And what about the hood on her with the blinkers? How severe of a blinker
did
she wear?
They're just French cup with a little peepholes in them. So really not much, just kind of make her focus. She's worn them, I think, every race except for her first one. So that, you know, I don't know if she really needs them, but she's doing good with them. So I think we'll keep them on.
Absolutely. How many, you know, this is now exciting because it gives you real option, knowing that she can be, you know, sharp enough to win at five, and, you know, the variety of courses and, the different kinds, you know, the fact that if races come off the turf, you can stay in. I mean, she gives you a lot of options.
Right, she does. Yeah, she, and you know, she still may stretch out some on the turf, so that's an option. You know, she relaxed really well, and the turn of foot she had. I mean, I don't think they came back to her. I think she ran them down. So. You know, I guess we do have a lot of options. We just have to pick our spots and hope for the best. I hope it stays on the turf. She seems to like that a whole lot. But, we're not scared to run her if it comes off. Obviously, she can do both.
Well, a career best 86 buyer too, from a figure standpoint. Yeah,
plenty of options. That's good to know.
You know, looking at the work you've done, and so far at the meet, you've sent out 8 starters, 2 wins, 3 seconds. The big question that is on people's mind is how did being the rodeo queen in Davie, how did it prepare you for your training career?
No, I wasn't a rodeo queen. I lived there, and I was not. I never rodeoed, actually. I just hung out with them.
That's a question that came from our friend John in Shively, sent that question in.
No rodeo queen for me. I'm strictly thoroughbreds.
We're looking forward to the rest of this meet too, Michelle. I mean, you seem very poised, and of course, we should mention the fact that we had brunch before the meet started, and you had a horse in the opener, right? A tradition, and a horse in the last. And now I know why you don't bet, because you can't handicap. You like the horse in the nightcap. You didn't like the horse in the first, who proceeded to then, you know, open the meet.
Thanks
with
for
a
telling on me, Steve. that's great. No, I don't. I don't bet on them. I figured someone told me this a long time ago that if you bet on them and you lose twice. If you win, you win, and that's good enough. So I'll just we'll take my cut of the purse, and the one that I won with, fortunate enough to have owned her. So that was
yes.
sweet.
Enough, yes.
So yeah. But yeah, and I got a lot of text messages that I was the leading owner trainer for about 25 minutes of the meet. So that was fun.
Well, you've been really sending out live horses. Let's talk about the ones that are coming up later in the week, actually, Thursday, and that includes a maiden that you're trying to same thing, turf sprinting, and that's Yes It's Ginger. This is a Yes It's True filly, the 3-year-old, and going to leave with Tyler Bays. And first time you're using Tyler, who, of course, has moved his tack. Talk about this one, first time away from the fairgrounds, made 3 starts over the winter and was competitive twice, a 6th beaten 2 and change and a 2nd beaten 2 and change most recently in March.
Yeah, that filly, she's a pretty neat filly. She belongs to the group, which is a really nice group of people. It's Brilliant Racing, and we got some newbies there, and we got some owners that have been in the business a long time, so it's a nice bunch, and they come and support. They just had their first win the other day on when I won my stake. They won earlier in the day with a horse that Steve Margolis trains for them. And so they were over the top. So the pressure's off, sort of, because they finally got their first win as a group. They're a new group, probably a year in the making. And then this filly, she's pretty cool. Her first race on the turf down there, she probably could have at least been 3rd. Colby Hernandez rode her, and he got boxed in. But she showed that she could run some, and she was pretty exciting. And then we tried her on the dirt, which she didn't really like that as much, and put her back on the turf, and she gave us a really exciting run. So we're happy. Hopefully it stays on the turf for us. And Gabriel was going to ride her, and we got Tyler Bays instead, which is great. I've never met him, so it's going to be hopefully he'll like her, and hopefully we get lucky. It would be wonderful to have that filly run well or win for Brilliant Racing. So she's ready.
That's the group. In fact, I talked to Margo about Brilliant, and this is Brandon Staubel and company, right?
Right. It sure is. Yeah.
Very nice. Had a winner over the weekend and didn't realize it was their first. That's exciting, and it's great that, frankly, it's great that you and that they've tabbed you and Steve to do the training. That
I like that. It says something right there. Let's also ask about the first-time starter. You're going to dip one in, maiden 20, Singapore Flash. Gabe does ride this one. This is a Shanghai Bobby, and we're going 7 furlongs in the fifth on Thursday.
Yeah, he's a little horse that we acquired. One of my longtime owners, Virginia Elder, raised him and owned him, and she passed away. And so we wanted to kind of keep him in the family. I trained for her for about 14 or 15 years, and she was a lovely human. So when he came up for sale, we bought him. My assistant, Mitch Butler, actually owns him. And, you know, he's just a little horse that tries really hard. And 7 furlongs is kind of a difficult, race, actually, to ask a horse to run first time out. But it's what we had kind of him pointed for him when he's, you know, ready for his first start. So I think he'll, run well. We'll find out for sure. So hopefully it's not too far for him or not too short. He kind of looks like he might want to go a little longer, but hopefully he'll run well. And my assistant's pretty excited about finally getting him in a race. So he's been, we've had him for about 4 months, I think. So he's ready. We're all ready for him to run.
Nice. Well, you also are on the AE list, in the sixth race, and frankly, I think you may be looking for another spot for Clouded Judgment. Yeah, that I don't think you want him running against that group.
it's a pretty tough group for sure. Yeah, I don't think we'll be running him. And he's owned by the same owner, Roddy Harrison and
Home
Harry Harrison.
That was a homebred, right?
Right, yeah. So he's we'll probably have to look for a different spot for him. You know, we kind of depend on a shorter race for him, and the 5.5 on the turf. Usually if he runs well on the turf or off the turf, so we're hoping for maybe it to come off and maybe, lighten that field up a little bit. But then we have Ginger in on the turf, so I guess we'll hope for the turf and wait for another day for him because he's in a really tough spot.
Well, Michelle, a good meet already with the winner from the first race of the whole session and multiple seconds. In fact, yesterday, 2 more seconds. And so everything's firing. Everything's running.
Yeah, that's exciting when it happens like that. We had a really good Churchill meet last year. We did really well at Churchill, so it's a good place to do. If you're going to do well somewhere, this is a good place to do it. So, yeah, our barn is the morale is up, and horses are running well, and it's great to be here. I love this place. So, yeah, hopefully we keep firing them. Yeah, and I still won't bet because I'm a bad handicapper. Remember?
I love it. How you fixed for 2-year-olds?
You know, I have a couple. I just got one of my own in, a homebred, that's a full sister to a horse that ran fourth the other day, Jess Might, but he's a winner. And so that she's pretty far away from a race probably. And then I've got another horse for Roddy Harrison as well, Perry and Roddy Harrison. She shouldn't be too far from a race. We've got a couple coming in. We just got to get some stall space. It's pretty tight back here to get the 2-year-olds in, but we've got some. We just don't have anything like poised to, fire yet, so you can't brag on anything yet.
Well, we'll be keeping an eye out, and Michelle Lovell firing on all cylinders and a new stake winner. We'll keep an eye for opportunity to bigger and some opportunities for this obviously nice and still developing Change of Control, the FedBiz winner of the Mamzelle. Well done, Michelle. Look forward to talking soon.
All right, that sounds great. Brunch too. Hurry up, come back.
Well, I would love to.
Big John out there He'll make reservations, you know. He's good at that. You know, I'll go get something at, where do we go, Lemieux or wherever. It's always great. It's always good to hang out.
Even though you didn't bet, I bet John did.
I hope he did. Yeah, well, I can tell you what, he bet on me the other day, and he said he lost his bet. I had to get off my pony on the track, and he's a big pony, and I had to pick up something off the track, and he bet that I wouldn't get back on from the ground. Probably without splitting my jeans or something. Anyway, I did, and he texted me and said he lost his first bet of the day, so I don't know.
He'll
bet on anything.
What's that pony's name?
Elwood. He's famous,
Elwood.
If you didn't know, yeah, because he drinks beer. He was on the news during Derby, and he's a fan favorite. So, he's my boy. Yeah.
Now,
so,
Michelle Lovell.
Next time you come, the leg up.
I'd be great. I love that. I love that.
Okay.
Last pony I rode was Carla Wolfson. Put me up on her pony years ago at Calder.
Oh yeah. So how'd you do?
Pretty good. Rode around the barnyard, and I felt like Alan Ladd. I'm about the same height actually as Alan Ladd, and I felt like Shane. Come back, Michelle. Thanks so much. I appreciate this.
Thanks, Steve, for having me on. It's good talking to you.
You got it. Michelle Lovell, one of the absolute favorites anywhere that she is stabled. Let's take a break. John White standing by. We're going to get some of John's thoughts. And, John did some steward. You know, we talked to him last Tuesday. He did the steward thing. And now this 15-day suspension for Luis Saez is getting just absolutely appropriately panned. It's hard to believe that with what has gone on, that you would add insult to injury here for Saez. Amazing, just amazing. Trying to reinforce what is already the fact that, as I've said, it might be the correct call. It doesn't make it a good call. And then to reinforce with this action is seemingly an act that is only going to further add kerosene to a more than a brush fire. Back after this with John.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the sun on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back. Back at Pimlico. Looks like the rain is, the skies have lightened up a little bit. Kind of hazy now, too. This is just like last year's Preakness when the fog rolled in. The fog of descent is also rolling in on as I just said, leaving, for the break. Tony Black, calling this a disgrace. He definitely made every effort to correct the horse. Suspension is a disgrace. I see Julie Crone weighs in, says, you know, you want to hit the jock with a little suspension, you give him 3 days, 15 days. You know, and by the way, one story, since now this is going to come up, might as well throw this into the mix. You know, apparently the jocks chose to use the 360 whips. You know, they were using the new you know, kindler, gentler. They were already kindler, gentler. I think now we're in the realm of wet noodle for a riding crop. So you can fold that in that he was using the styrofoam. You know, the crop as the tool to try to help him direct. I mean, the rider has to make an effort to correct, but he did that. I suppose that there, I haven't read the ruling. I know it's up on a couple of, Byron King was going to have the written part of it. I guess it's on the KHRC website. You know, I suppose, there's more detail as to, you know, why they felt a 15 day. They don't give 15 days to guys that are reckless. Amazing. John White, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Well, three words come to mind for me. Tony Black says disgrace. The three words that come to mind for me: egregious, punitive, and ridiculous.
Nice.
I have to say that the three stewards involved here, and I do not ever criticize stewards with glee because it's a tough job, and so I do not relish ever criticizing stewards anywhere. But these stewards have left themselves open for criticism by not posting the inquiry sign. They dropped the ball there by not making the public aware of John Court's claim of foul until 2 hours after the race. They dropped the ball there by not meeting with Mr. West and or Mr. Service either after the races, which I would have been advocating to do under the extreme circumstances of the Kentucky Derby and a disqualification, the first of a winner for a race foul in the 145-year history of the race. You don't say, well, we'll see you Thursday. So they dropped the ball there, and this is a major ball drop in my mind. This is just incomprehensible, and especially when We've had, and I will say this, Steve, and I said this with some friends at dinner the other night, because this race just continues to live on, and people that just continue to say, what were your thoughts on the Kentucky Derby? But on the 22 minutes it took them to reach the decision, as I had explained to you last week, I can understand that because of the number of horses involved, and they had to talk to the riders, and they had to consult with the mutual department. A lot of things were going on. I'll be honest, I mean, it could have taken more than 22, realistically. I mean, it wasn't like they were taking those 22 minutes just to decide whether or not to take Maximum Security down. But I do have sympathy in this regard and empathy, and that is the decision they made for the disqualification, they will have to live with for the rest of their lives. And when in all the races I've adjudicated as a steward, if in the following days people had gone through in any of those races with a frame-by-frame tooth comb to where you're down to half a path and you came out, you know, one path, half a path, and you have video evidence here that they're showing in slow-mo and so forth, you go through a horse race where horses that weigh over 1,000 pounds and are running 40 miles an hour, and you're trying to judge the race, and now everybody's slowing it down to such an extent and going through with such a fine-tooth comb. Boy, I would want to take more than 22 minutes under those circumstances. But here, for these racing officials to dish out a penalty this severe, and this, I think, also shines light on, I have agreed that I think one of the three stewards should always be an ex-rider. I've felt more comfortable when I've worked in the steward stand with an ex-rider. But I've been lucky. I've worked with some great racing officials that were ex-riders, led by Daryl McCarg, who is now the chief steward in the state of California. And I've worked with him in the steward stand twice. And, I mean, he is an outstanding steward. There's no getting around it. So knowledgeable and just so he's one of the best in the history of the game, quite frankly. And I've been around a lot of stewards all over the country. And going back to my days in Idaho in the 1990s, Bill Stallings, who wasn't that successful as a rider, he was a successful rider, but not certainly like a Daryl McCarg, but he had graduated from the University of Colorado with a degree in chemistry, and boy, when you talk about having a steward with that kind of expertise in medication, but particularly I liked it with Bill and Daryl when having to deal with the riders and riders' infractions and that sort of thing. And, you know, I would have been pretty reticent if I were one of these three stewards to be dishing out a penalty this severe when one of the three of us isn't even an ex-rider. This is really just absurd. I mean, I could never have gone beyond, 5 days. You heard Julie Krohn say 3 days. Well, I would say, the most you could push me to even contemplate would be 5 days. And my vote off of all the evidence I've seen, video evidence, is I would have voted for no penalty is warranted here. This is a horse acting like a young horse. Saya said it right after the race. He's like a baby. And whatever spooked him, whether it was the crowd noise, whether it was some light shining on the track or something from the infield, it doesn't matter what it was. He got spooked. And it wasn't like this rider recklessly took this horse out in the path. Everybody can see that. I mean, my goodness, this isn't like that hard to see. And the point of giving out a penalty for a riding infraction, if there are extenuating circumstances, that comes into play. And there's certainly extenuating circumstances in this regard. I go back to Ron Turcotte, who rode the Great Secretariat. He couldn't ride Secretariat in his final career start in the Canadian International. And this was a real disappointment to Ron Turcotte because he was a Canadian born in Canada and would have loved to have ridden Secretariat in Canada. But he was given a suspension for riding a two-year-old filly on the turf at Aqueduct, and it was late in the day, And Turcotte told me, he says, if I had it, one thing to do over as a jockey, it would have been to fight that suspension and ride Secretariat. But he says it wouldn't have been to just ride Secretariat, because back then we didn't appeal Stewart's decisions very often. But he says, I didn't warrant the days. And when he told me that, I thought, oh, yeah, sure. I'm thinking that's what they all say. That was my thought to myself. And then Turcotte explained what happened. The filly's in front coming down to the finish line, and she's green, and it's late. It's virtually dark. There are no lights at Aqueduct. And he says, we weren't far from the tote board, and the lights on the tote board blinking and flashing in that light. My filly ducked out. She spooked from that. And he said, I never am saying I didn't deserve to be disqualified. Yes, I deserved to be disqualified, but I wasn't reckless or careless. I didn't deserve the suspension. And I thought to myself, well, yes, those are extenuating circumstances, and yes, he probably didn't deserve the suspension. And in this case, I certainly do not. I don't think a suspension is warranted here, let alone a 15-day suspension. I mean, come on.
Well, there's. I can just tell you already. You, watching what's going on, there's. People are disgusted with this as a follow-up, and even the people, I can tell too, the people that say, you know, I had no trouble with the DQ, I agree with the DQ, but this is, you said it well, punitive and excessive and et cetera. So, we'll, a new wrinkle to what is already a crumpled, a very unkempt Derby aftermath. John, let's shift our gears for a little bit. And your pre-weekend entry in the ExpressBet wagering guide for Preakness and what your thoughts were going in. And now with the addition of a couple of horses who kind of came out of the woodwork since Friday.
Well, I will say that, you know, like I was listening to Johnny D, and he's not too high on Warwill, and, you know, a lot of people are not too high on Warwill, and look, I get it. I mean, but I really like Warwill a lot in this spot. You know, I'm not saying, yes, he's a slam dunk to win here, but the circumstances of this race, it's all lining up very well for him, although I would just as soon have not added fuel to the pace in this race. Because Warwill wants to be up there as well, and the hotter the pace, you know, I don't think that helps him any. But what really helps him here is, to me in the Derby, he proved to me the quality colt that he is. You know, Mark Cassie had been calling him a superstar early on, and that my ears prick up when Mark Cassie really talks someone up, and because he knows what he's seeing. And Warwill was this Derby coming out of the number one post, which was actually the number two post, but you know, he broke alertly as usual, and then he was rankish into the clubhouse turn, around the clubhouse turn early on the backstretch, so that took some energy out of him. I think that's one of the reasons he did weaken a bit late in the race. Of course, we know what happened to him on the far turn. Little did I know that he got bothered to such an extent that it warranted a 15-day suspension. Ha ha. But, you know, he was bothered over there. And then re-engaged, which shows a lot on that colt. It shows his quality again. He didn't throw in the towel when he got cut off. So that, to me, is a real sign of his quality. And look, when you keep watching this race, and unfortunately, because of the circumstances, this is a race I've seen probably more times now than anything in the last decade. When you watch him in the last 16th, I mean, he's still right there at the 16th pole, and yes, he runs a little out of gas at the end, but under the whole circumstances of the race, especially in the context that he got virtually nothing out of the Louisiana Derby. So, I mean, this was his first real race in a long, long time. And this is what I love about him in the two-week turnaround to the Preakness. I mean, he should be really primed here to run a big race, considering that he had a right to be a little short in the Kentucky Derby. So, you know, in the fact, he probably won't be the favorite here, and probable, you know, most likely is going to be the favorite. And I love the fact here that War Will, he's cutting back in distance, you know, another 16th to mile 3/16th. I think this is going to help him. There's just everything is kind of lining up here for him. And I think it's a great opportunity. If you're on the War Will bandwagon, the fact that he won't even be the favorite here, this is kind of value to me, honestly. I look for him to bounce out of the Preakness, I mean out of the Derby, and run big in the Preakness, much as I was extremely confident Point Given that was going to happen. And I loved him and thought he was an absolute cinch in the Preakness, and that proved to be the case. And then he, of course, won the Belmont by a big margin and went on to be Horse of the Year. And, you know, we've looking at Lucky's, another one. You know, he came out of that inside post position, got annihilated early in the Derby. It was a complete throwout, but he bounced back and won the Preakness. So I'm looking for that type of thing. You know, you go back to Little Current. He should have been a Triple Crown winner. That was the Derby that led to the cap of 20, which 20 is too many, honestly. I mean, one thing about this year's Derby that, again, has kind of shown a light on, 20 it really is probably too many horses to run in one race on that track. It just is. But honestly, the number of horses didn't come into play too much. I mean, but that slowing down of the pace by Maximum Security, it is amazing how he went that first quarter so fast. And then Darren Rogers on his radio show Friday, which I listened to, from Louisville, he was pointing out they did the research, and it was the second slowest half mile in the race. If you broke it down by the first half mile and then the next half mile, and that's what led to the kind of accordion aspect of where it all bunched up on the far turn. You know, Maximum Security, if he had been ridden more like a Gary Stevens or a Pat Valenzuela type, to where they tried to break the race open going into the far turn, he might have been clear. And when he ducked out, there wouldn't have been anybody that close to him. But I understand why Saez was not doing that, because they're concerned about the mile and a quarter. And so he's trying to save and slow the race down. But a lot of times you can win the race, and Andy Serling talks about this a lot. Use your best weapon. Use your speed. And it depends on when you want to do that. But the way that Maximum Security came home, the second fastest final quarters, the fastest final quarter since Animal Kingdom, and really one of the fastest final quarters we've seen in recent times, faster than even American Pharoah or Justify or California Chrome. And this was why you and I talked right after the Florida Derby. You know, people, we were saying, don't get fooled by that running for maiden 16,000. That's totally irrelevant. And don't get fooled by the slow early pace of the Florida Derby. The way that Maximum Security came home, and with the rider sitting just still and opening up, turning for home, that was a serious race that horse ran. And that's why it's not a surprise, total surprise, that he would run a serious race to finish first at the Kentucky Derby. So, you know, improbable to me here, so... I don't know. Baffert is so good at coming back out of the Derby. He's never lost a Preakness with a Derby winner, but Improbable's not a Derby winner. But Baffert, you know, has won with Point Given and looking at Lucky that didn't win the Preakness. So, I mean, Baffert's outstanding in this two-week turnaround. And Improbable's a quality horse, and it didn't have the best of trips in the Derby, and maybe didn't really like the track that much. And that's another wrinkle that makes the Derby hard to decipher, is the fact they were having to run on yet a sloppy track, which is becoming as much of a tradition as mint juleps at Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May. But there's something about, now I think cutting back another 16th is going to help Improbable too. You know, that City Zip just keeps sitting there staring me in the face. And even though he's got the AP Indy on the bottom, I'm a little concerned about Improbable, how far he really wants to go. And maybe his best, absolute best, would be like a mile and an eighth, you know, ish. But you have to respect Improbable in this spot too. But and look, I know the pace has gotten a lot faster here. But this Always Mining is—he's serious to me. I mean, you know, and the other horse in here, and I'd be interested in your thoughts, because we didn't know the last time we talked that he would be in the race, And I just get the feeling there's a race in here one of these days with win, with his name on it to win a big race. And maybe this is going to be the one. At the very least, I look at win as a really strong candidate to hit the board here. I don't think he handled that track at Churchill very much at all. And his whole form is muddled up. He's a better horse, I think, than he's been able to show. And that's how you catch a horse at a really big price.
You know, I certainly agree that he didn't care for the going, and you could see him first time past the stands. He was, as they say, climbing, and didn't care for the goo, didn't care for the splash. You know, Improbable actually very much in the same, in that same vein, was down in a spot where you could see he didn't look entirely comfortable. Everybody coming out of Derby has got, some degree, obviously, of either excuse or of, a reason for where they finished. And War of Will, the most readily apparent after the incident. And no matter how it came to be, Improbable because of a fairly awkward trip. And both the, Bodie Express, To my way of thinking, he checked out even before Maximum Security came out. Bodie Express was, had already, kind of put the brakes on and then backed up. Having Velasquez gets him in the race, don't be surprised if he's adding pressure. And then you bring up win, and there's people that feel that long term he belongs one turning or middle distance. He deserves one more, certainly one more shot in here, and he just didn't, he didn't do all that much running. And given the way that Mike Trombetta had planned, to have the one start and then a little bit of a break and then a penultimate start before coming to Kentucky, that part has worked out. And I don't know why you wouldn't run. Looking forward to Mrs. Weber having another shot in a classic, and I don't see why he can't, why he can't be involved in here. I mean, this, especially if the pace scenario is heated up from what we originally anticipated. The one thing, John, is there's going to be a few horses on that front to choose from. Because Bourbon War, is a not deep back of the pack type, but certainly a horse that is going to be further back than Stalkers. Obviously, Laughing Fox is going to run late. Owendale is going to run late, and win. And Signalman's an interesting case too. I suppose he and Another Twist of Fate and Market King, they're going to be that middle group. So you can sort of see now you've got a third of the field that is going to be, in the forefront. You're going to have a third that, that is going to be mid-pack types, and then you've got a third of the field that are going to come from off the pace. It's going to be very distinct in terms of how this field, will lay out past the stands.
Well, another plus for win, you look at his pedigree, and his sire is by Sunday Silence. His dam is by Smarty Jones. So there are two Preakness winners right there in that pedigree. And Johnny D was talking up Another Twist of Fate. And he was in my top 10 for the Kentucky Derby all the way until he wasn't going to be in the Kentucky Derby. He's a colt with a lot of talent, I think. The only thing I don't like about him, particularly into this race, is even though Another Twist of Fate didn't have a comfortable trip in Lexington, once he got an open path at the top of the lane, I just didn't like the way he came home that final eighth that day. I would have liked to have seen him maybe give Owendale a much more of a run in that final furlong, but I was very impressed with Owendale because that move he made on the far turn was really impressive, and he opened up a two-length lead at the eighth pole, and really considering the big move he made on the far turn, I would have not been shocked if he got a little late, as they say, or weakened a bit in that final few yards, and he still almost won by two lengths. I mean, that, and got a 98 buyer. I mean, that's another thing about that Lexington that makes both Owendale and another Twist of Fate who got a 95. To me, it puts him right in the mix with everybody in this race. And the thing about another Twist of Fate here is he's now proven he can run on the dirt, and which isn't a surprise. I mean, most of the Scat Daddies, it seems to me, they do. We saw a Triple Crown winner by, and a Preakness winner last year by Scat Daddy and Justify. And another Twist of Fate should be, you know, in a pretty good spot early. He's not fast enough, I think, to be setting the pace, but he's probably going to be in that third, fourth, fifth area, which might not be a bad spot in this Preakness in terms of if the pace is pretty hot. You know, that War of Will's probably going to be in maybe that about third, fourth, fifth, you know, type spot, maybe second even. I don't know, but and like you say, Bourbon War is an interesting end of this race. You know, Signal Man, I've respected him ever since he won the Kentucky Jockey Club, but I keep looking at him, and the fact he's never run a buyer higher than 88 is just, it keeps nagging at me, and it makes me feel like he's one of those two-year-olds that hasn't improved at three, but we don't have much evidence here. I mean, he ran in the Fountain of Youth, which McPeak said, look, I was, you know, just getting him started there. I had him, I didn't have him really cranked at all. And he was pointing him to the Bluegrass, and that, he didn't run a bad race in the Bluegrass at all. He was third in there, beaten in a photo for second with Win, Win, Win. So this will be his third start of the year, and he had a really good work the other day. So, you know, he's another one that could pop up here one of these days. I mean, in other words, if Signal Man won, would I be shocked? Not at all. I wouldn't be shocked. You know, he's been consistent. He's never been, he's been worse than third only once, and that was that Fountain of Youth, which McPeak says you draw a line through. So it's an intriguing race. I mean, you know, it's a shame, again, that it is, you know, Johnny D mentioned that it's a shame everybody's knocking the thing just because we don't have either the Derby first-place finisher or the eventual Derby winner in it. But, look, if you like a good betting race, the Preakness this year is a good betting race. It really is.
No doubt. I'm happy to have this conundrum compared to, you know, what has been historically a fairly notorious short price. I mean, there's been... You know, obviously there's been Preakness winners or Derby winners that have come here, and you know, most notably the wet track scenario. That's been between Always Dreaming and Orb. You know, that was one of the things, John, when we got here last year, that everybody, you know, said, well, you know, the wet track Derby winners have notoriously, you know, misfired, and they haven't performed, you know, as well as, you know, as others in recent years. But it feels like lately every you know, every Triple Crown race is a wet track race. But I think in this particular scenario, I mean, you've got four Derby horses showing up here, and I think you still, as I wrote, you still start out with, you know, the Derby runners. That's at the heart of your decision making, and the first two choices obviously is where this begins. And just as a reminder, this came out the other day. I forget who might have been Jeremy, but you know, between Hansel and Pine Bluff and Tabasco Cat, Louis Couture's. You brought up Point Given. You could talk about a Fleet Alex and Curlin. They were both third. Looking at Lucky was, what, sixth, seventh? Shackleford was off the board, right? He was fourth, in fourth or fifth in Derby. And Oxbow, you know, had been part of the pace and ran a sneaky good Derby before coming back to winning to win the Preakness. So don't necessarily abandon the Derby horses, you know, just out of hand. You start with them, because there's what is that? 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Make that 10 since 91.
Well, like you say, that's become the way I approach the Preakness, is that's where I start. And I will say, I've become a fan of Always Mining, and it would be a great story if he won, and I could see him winning. I mean, look, I loved his last race because he really proved that he does not have to have the lead to win. So no matter what the pace is, I mean, it's just going to be a question. Has this gelding by Stay Thirsty, has he blossomed, you know, to where he's going to – Johnny D raised the parallel that he's like a boxer that's going to now get punched in the face, and it's a good analogy because certainly Always Mining is going to be facing, you know, tougher than he has before, although he beat Win in the Maryland Juvenile, but Win broke badly that day, but still he beat him. But to be facing the likes of Order Will and Improbable and the whole group here, I mean, it's a tougher assignment. Everybody knows that. But the way he's been winning these races and just look so good winning them, and he's sires by a Preakness winner too, Bernardini. So I would love to see Always Mining. It wouldn't, you know, even though I'm on the War of Will bandwagon, I would be happy to see Always Mining win. I think he can win. I really do. You know, basically, yeah. Ever since he's been gelded, he's just turned into this win machine. And, you know, and he's not winning by a neck or anything. I mean,
no, he's winning with authority. He's a serious horse. And I can tell you that Mike Trombetta
very easily perhaps won the wood, yeah. And they had toyed with that thought. And believe me, I respect Tacitus, but I think he could have given Tacitus a serious run for his money.
John, thanks a lot. Best of luck this weekend. And back tomorrow, of course, day two from Pimlico. I want to thank John and Michelle Lovell and Johnny D and Sal Sinatra. We'll catch up with Andy, do some more fallout from the New York weekend. I've got plenty more of the results that we didn't even get to from the weekend. My fault, as we kind of dove right into it. Replay 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM, and back with you live tomorrow morning. Archive and podcast later on today as well. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.